From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. June 1st marks the official start of the six-month Atlantic hurricane season. Hurricane Wilma in 2005 was the last hurricane to hit the state, leaving emergency managers worried that residents have become complacent about storm preparation. A look at what experts say Floridians should do to prepare as we explore storm activity predictions for the coming season. Plus, the National Flood Insurance Program provides policies for 5.1 million properties nationwide. Florida accounts for nearly 40% of those policies, and the federal program is nearly $24 billion in debt. We take a look at the current status of the National Flood Insurance Program and efforts to expand the flood insurance marketplace. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. The National Flood Insurance Program accounts for the overwhelming majority of flood insurance policies in the U.S., including nearly 2 million properties in the Sunshine State. But following losses from Hurricane Katrina in 2005 and Superstorm Sandy in 2012, the program is nearly $24 billion in debt to the U.S. Treasury. Last month, policyholders saw an increase in their flood insurance premiums. Later this hour, we explore the current status of the program and efforts to increase the number of private insurers entering the flood insurance marketplace. But first, the June 1st start of the Atlantic hurricane season is just around the corner. Colorado State University's Tropical Meteorology Project predicts an at or near average season, which would mean about 12 named storms, with six of those becoming hurricanes and two to three strengthening to a Category 3 or higher. Florida has been protected in recent years by an El Nino weather pattern, but that's weakening rapidly now. Experts also note, however, that the number of predicted storms has no correlation to the likelihood of a hurricane making landfall in the U.S. Hurricane Wilma was the last storm to hit the state in 2005, which means Florida is currently on the longest stretch of consecutive years without a hurricane making landfall since records were first kept in 1851. Emergency management experts worry that residents may become complacent. Joining me now for a look at what forecasters are calling for in the coming season and how residents need to prepare and stay informed is Wayne Saliday, also known as Hurricane Wayne. He's the director of Charlotte County's Office of Emergency Management. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well. We're also speaking with Florida Public Radio Emergency Network meteorologist Jeff Huffman. Welcome back to the show to you as well, Jeff.
Good afternoon. Nice to be here. Thank you.
And before we get into the live conversation, WGCU's Topher 4 has recently caught up with Federal Emergency Management Agency Administrator Craig Fugate at the Naples Municipal Airport during the Hurricane Awareness Tour. Fugate previously directed Florida's Division of Emergency Management. Topher begins that conversation by asking, when does FEMA snap into action when a hurricane hits? Let's hear that conversation now.
Actually starts before the hurricane hits. Part of the hurricane program is developing in conjunction with the Weather Service and the National Hurricane Center and the Army Corps of Engineers where areas are vulnerable to storm surge. And particularly here in South Florida, you have some of the greatest vulnerabilities to storm surge, one of the principal threats for hurricane. So we work in the beginning preparing for the information for local emergency managers. We do a lot of training. But if a hurricane does threaten the state of Florida, our job is to support the governor and his team as they respond to counties. And this pretty much when I was a state director in 2004, when we went through the four hurricanes, we know our role is in the support of, but we also know we can't wait till the state says it's bad. We know we have a significant hurricane that's going to threaten the state. We start sending folks already days before the hurricane gets here to link up with the governor's team, move supplies, and get ready for the impacts.
And what would you recommend somebody do and get preparation for the hurricane season?
Well, it's pretty much if you live in Florida, and the problem is I know there's a lot of people have moved to Florida in recent years, is we haven't had hurricanes in a while, and some people think, well, we're not going to have any anytime soon. Well, every hurricane season, Florida is at risk for hurricanes. So the first step you have to take is find out, if you live along the coast, do I live in an evacuation zone? Because that's going to determine your plan. If you do live in an evacuation zone, your plan is to evacuate. And here's why it's so critical in Southwest Florida. You really only have two ways to get out of here. Go north on I-75 or go east on I-75 and 41. and you need to leave early. There are so many people that will be at risk that will need to evacuate that part of the plan is to evacuate early, oftentimes a day or more before the hurricane would get here. So it's important to have a plan that you're going to evacuate, know where you're going to go, have a plan to take your pets with you and know where they're going to go, and do that now. If you don't live in the evacuation zones, there's a lot of other things you can do to get ready, because we saw this particularly after Hurricane Wilma down here. Power went out not just for days. In some areas, it was out for weeks. So taking the steps now to prepare, having supplies, means that when that storm threatens, you're not that last-minute shopper in line with everybody else and supplies run out. You're not that person trying to figure out, where am I supposed to go? And you again need to evacuate when the order is given and not wait.
Who gives the order to evacuate?
All right. And
can you walk me through the process?
Sure. Okay. Yeah, the National Hurricane Center, they're tracking the storms. They see a storm. As it begins approaching, not on the coast, but several days out, they'll begin providing some forecast of where we think the greatest impacts will be. That information then with the state and local governments is built into those products that we have built ahead of time that says these are the areas at greatest risk from storm surge. And part of what the local emergency managers, and this will come from your county emergency manager working with the county team, is a recommendation of when the county chairman would order that evacuation. And it's based upon a lot of factors, the strength of the storm, the type of impacts, but also how long it takes to evacuate. So that's why I caution people, you could be given an evacuation order on a day like today, and it's bright and sunny. If you remember Hurricane Charley, and that's, you know, over, yeah, some time ago, and I think people forgot, when we started getting the first evacuation orders along the southwest coast, Charley had barely cleared Cuba. So these storms, you know, aren't going to necessarily be right here. It may not be impacting the area yet. It could be a sunny day. But the evacuation orders are given based upon who's at greatest risk and how long it takes to evacuate to a safe location.
So based on projections that you guys have made in preparation for the hurricane season?
Well, part of it's based upon the information we built about who's vulnerable, and then married that with the forecast from National Hurricane Center, then gives the local emergency managers the tools to make the decision of when it's time to evacuate and who needs to evacuate.
Do you look for people once they've been evacuated? Do you look for people who have stayed behind the evacuation zones?
Well, that's one of the challenges that local government has, is getting people to evacuate. And part of our plan working with the state is they put together a lot of resources to go in after the storm to do search and rescue operations. But obviously, the more people that successfully evacuate, the fewer people that will be left behind, which means we can move from rescue operations into recovery operations. And we hopefully will not be dealing with as much loss of life.
Do you think people have gotten better about seeing the signs of evacuation and then leaving when it's time to go?
Not really. I think it's just nature's way of people always wanting to deny that it's going to be that bad, particularly if they were here during Wilma and Charley and they lived down here in Naples. And they said, you know, we went through those hurricanes. It wasn't that bad. And I have to remind people, the impacts of those hurricanes did not directly hit the southwest coast. They went either south of you or north of you. And the most dangerous thing is to make assumption about a past hurricane in your experience and say, well, we'll be okay. It wasn't that bad during those storms. You got to treat each storm differently. The forecast will be specific to that storm. And in southwest Florida, and again, if you look across the country, this is some of the most vulnerable areas because it is low, flat. I mean, you have to basically get to I-75 before you get much over 10 foot above sea level. So a powerful storm coming in the southwest can impact a lot of people, a lot of areas, not just the barrier islands and not just the immediate coast. You know, everybody likes to have boat slips in their backyards around here. So all these canals, that water's going to come up into those canals and flood areas that people say, well, I'm not on the coast. We have mapped that. And that's why it's so important when either Dan Summers, the emergency management director here, the guys up in Lee County or further up the coast say it's time to go. It's time to go. And you need to move to higher ground, move to a safer location.
How can people find out if they're in the evacuation zone, if they need to go?
Contact your county emergency management agency. I think you can still look in the phone books and see some of those zones. But a lot of this is now online, so you can type in your address and look up. So go to your county government site, look for emergency management, you know, Google the storm surge, and you should be able to look up and actually find on a map where you live and what zone you're in.
We had a particularly strong El Nino, and I heard different reports or concerns that it might bring an even stronger hurricane season this year. Is that a concern of yours?
Well, generally with strong El Ninos, it suppresses hurricane seasons, and we saw that to a certain degree last year. But this El Nino is now transitioning into a neutral phase and possibly going into La Nina. So for those that were here in 2004, we were in a neutral year. But the problem with those types of seasonal forecasts is they're not going to tell you how much activity and where you're going to have a storm hit with any degree of precision. And in 1992 was a below average hurricane season. The first storm of that year was Hurricane Andrew. So we look at each season as you have to get ready for it. As far as El Nino goes, it is going into a transition to a neutral phase, so it won't have that much impact on the season. We're moving into neutral conditions, and again, in 2004, during those neutral years, we were hit with four hurricanes.
That was FEMA Administrator Craig Fugate speaking with WGCU's Topher Forjas earlier this week in Naples. We now open up the live conversation with Florida Public Radio Emergency Network meteorologist Jeff Huffman and Director of Charlotte County's Office of Emergency Management Wayne Saliday. I also invite listeners to join the conversation, particularly if you're one of the many Floridians who've moved here after the tumultuous 2004 and 2005 storm seasons. Connect with our guests, ask your questions about storm preparation. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or tweet using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And Wayne Saliday, that conversation with Craig Fugate kind of serves as a primer here, but and of course, it's great every year that we go by without experiencing a hurricane. But does that increase your concern about complacency, given population turnover and growth?
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I know Craig did not talk about. And it's not the people that have been here; it's the people that have not. And our population in Southwest Florida alone has changed, turned over by 60% since the hurricanes of 04, 05. That means 6 out of 10 people here today have absolutely no hurricane experience because, as we heard, we've gone 150 years without a 10-year run until now. And so climatology, the history of weather, tells us that's got to change, and it will. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when it does. And people that are moving here, and it's those that waited out the recession, the baby boomers, and they finally have seen, clear to come down to Southwest Florida, and they're arriving here in ever greater numbers. We just received word here that our population has jumped up to 173,000, and that's quite a surprise for folks here to note that our population increased by 3% just over the last year.
What do emergency managers like yourself do to educate the public and really try to get people to understand the seriousness of this? I mean, do you ever pull out photos of, Hurricane Charlie damage, reminding people, hey?
Well, the scare tactics, over the years, we've probably tried everything. And really, the scare tactics have a minimal impact on people because it's not them. And it's like watching a disaster movie. It just doesn't really have, a great pull on their heartstrings. But I will tell you this, when we do hundreds, and I say hundreds, over the course of a couple of years, hundreds of public speaking engagements, and like last weekend, we had the big Hurricane Expo here at the Event Center in Punta Gorda, where we had standing room only. And immediately after that, and we do seminars. We do two seminars, and we packed the place. And after the seminar, I had people from Iowa, Indiana, Wisconsin, Illinois, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio, all wanting to ask, what are we facing? What are we dealing with here? And the overriding answer and the thing that people have to understand is you must know your zone. And I know Craig said that, and we can't emphasize that enough. But if you don't know, if you're in a level A, level B, level C, and you're told to evacuate, it's not going to mean anything to you. But I've got to tell you, just like we tell people, there's nothing the emergency manager takes more seriously than asking people to leave their homes. We do that with great care, and we do it after a lot of consultation with the National Hurricane Center, with Tampa Bay Weather, with each other. We have conference calls. One thing we do more than anything else is have conference calls with the Hurricane Center, with the State Division of Emergency Management, and with the counties of Southwest Florida so that everybody's on the same page.
Well, and Craig Fugate had noted, back in previous years when evacuations have been called, you know, the hurricane itself might be somewhere around Cuba, and it looks like we're having a sunny day. I mean, do you worry folks might not take those evacuations seriously because they're called perhaps earlier than they think they would be?
Absolutely, because we now know after the experiences, particularly Hurricane Ike, it was Ike in Texas that really changed the game for the hurricane center. It was after Ike that they extended the watch and warning times, realizing that the water got to the coast probably 12 hours before even they expected it to, due to the size of Hurricane Ike. So we've got to be sensitive to that timeline and make sure that people are understanding that there's only so much time to get out before what we call the pre-eye landfall hazards condition, and that can be stated in one word, flooding. Before that arrives, because once those flooding waters of the surge arrive, you're not going anywhere. So, it's just a constant hammering of this message from our partners in the media, using now social media. Social media has become extraordinarily huge in our business. I have 5,000 people that follow every post that I put up, and then they share that with people who then share that with other people. So, the word is getting out there. And if people choose not to respond, then someday the decision that they make will be a bad one.
Well, you've already mentioned the flooding here. Let's go ahead and address that popular misconception right now that some people have, that the greatest risk from these storms is damaging winds.
Well, it's not. Statistically, if you look at hurricanes, typhoons, and cyclones, which is the same storm, different places on Earth, 90% of the people who have ever lost their lives drown. They weren't hit by flying debris. They weren't in a collapsing building. They drowned. 8,000 people in Galveston, Texas, 2,400 people on the south end of Lake Okeechobee, 2,000 people after in the aftermath of Katrina. These are things that people need to realize are very, very real, and they do happen. They just don't happen very frequently. But when they do, they leave a legacy that lasts for a very, very long time.
All right. And Jeff Huffman, what are forecasters predicting for the coming season as far as storm activity compared to recent years?
Well, you have to, as we heard from Mr. Fugate, you have to, remember the seasonal forecasts should not be how we react to them. We should not react to the seasonal forecast, I should say. But, we've heard the talk about moving into a La Nina. It appears that that's occurring a little faster. It may occur as early now as July. Typically in a La Nina season, it leads to less wind shear over the Caribbean and the Gulf of Mexico. Even if we don't move into a La Nina, there will be less wind shear in the Caribbean and Gulf of Mexico than we've seen in the past couple of years. So, I would say generally what I'm seeing, what other forecasters are starting to realize is that if you were just to think about this in a comparative sense as to the last several years where it's been relatively quiet, there's a reasonable amount of confidence that we will have more storms this year, and there's also a reasonable amount of confidence that more of them could form in the Caribbean and the Gulf, because out in the main development region, we still have some barriers to storm development and propagation to the west. We have what appears to be some cooler waters in the northeast Atlantic that are going to eventually make their way down with the trade winds to the main development region. We also have some dry air that's likely to still come into play from Africa. So conditions are not, there's not a lot of green lights for storms, if you will, in the main development region, but we're starting to see evidence that it may be more possible for several storms to develop this season in the Caribbean and the Gulf. And I also want to point out that when you go through these transition years, there are a couple of what we call analogs, where we use historical comparisons of the same meteorological conditions that suggest early season activity is something we really need to be on guard for. But we don't have we're actually in a very unusual state in terms of our atmosphere and our water temperatures on both oceans. We don't have a lot of historical comparison years to draw from in terms of a forecast. But one thing that I will say, and this is kind of always my mantra, we have to be ready, we have to be ready, we have to be ready, and we're already seeing evidence of something trying to flare up this weekend to our east.
Yeah, and we had a Hurricane Alex form way out in the Atlantic back in January, and you just mentioned the tropical weather system I just read about this morning. Is that unusual to see that kind of early activity? Or, again, it just depends.
Alex was unusual and has nothing to do with our Atlantic season. It just happened to occur just after the turn of the calendar year, and it was way in the eastern Atlantic. But when it comes to this potential development near the Bahamas, that's not unusual. In June, there's typically a storm every 2 years, and in May, about once every 4 to 5 years. And it's not unusual for at least an area of interest like this is to be identified this early in the season. It's basically forming along what used to be an old frontal boundary near the Bahamas, and the trade winds are just now starting to pick up and strengthen. Those are the east to west winds, the blow opposite from where our cold fronts typically come from. Those trade winds naturally strengthen this time of year, and that's what brings in some deeper moisture. That's what brings in the rainy season, afternoon showers and thunderstorms. And in this particular case, it would cause this disturbance to move westward. And when it hits those warmer waters between the peninsula and the Bahamas, it also will encounter an environment that's more favorable for some gradual development. I would say if you're worried about your holiday weekend, there's not going to be anything unusual this weekend, I think, in Florida, other than maybe an increased risk for rip currents and some higher seas on the Atlantic beaches. This is the time of year where every year we see the increase of the uptick in afternoon showers and thunderstorms. And whether we have a tropical system or not to our east, we're going to start to see more of those afternoon showers and thunderstorms.
All right. And just going back to the El Nino, La Nina weather patterns, just wanted to be clear. It's uncertain at this point whether or not the La Nina is going to have much impact or develop, but it sounds like the El Nino is rapidly weakening.
Yeah, and I had a chance to speak to Dr. Kloschbach from Colorado State about this back in late April, and he mentioned to me that, always the first forecast, the April one's the first one, his three, that first one's always the one with the lowest confidence. But he said this one's even unusually low. And I would say uncertainty in how this season plays out is unusually high because we have a lot more variables at play, a lot of moving parts to this equation, whereas last year we were really confident the El Nino was coming, and it was very obvious by midseason that most storms were encountering that wind shear that would prevent them from moving in our direction. So two things to take away from the forecast. By just relatively speaking, it's likely to be more active than prior years, and there's a lot of uncertainty in a seasonal forecast this year. As we always hear and say, it only takes one, and of course we'll continue to watch each individual system as it potentially develops.
Right. Ahead of the June 1st start of the Atlantic hurricane season, we're exploring this year's storm predictions and preparedness efforts. We're speaking with Florida Public Radio Emergency Network meteorologist Jeff Huffman, along with the director of Charlotte County's Office of Emergency Management, Wayne Saliday. I invite listeners to connect with our guests and join the conversation, especially if you've never experienced a hurricane before. Give us a call and ask your questions. The number is 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. Send email to GulfCoastLive@WGCU.org or tweet using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And let's take a call now from Charmaine in Sarasota. Charmaine, you're live on Gulf Coast Live. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
And what did you want to ask or let us know about?
Well, what I wanted to emphasize was to please ask you when you do this type of show to really push for people to plan for all their family members, including all creatures great and small. This is going back a bit, but when we had Andrew, it was such a mess because at that point there was no planning emphasized for animals. We had people rustling Pasadena horses that were going to take them to dog meat factories. We had exotics that no one knew how to maintain or medicate. We had packs of dogs who didn't know where they were because there were no landmarks and they weren't microchipped. This is all so important, from lizards to horses to exotics. If you've got animals that are your responsibility, you need to know where they're going to go.
I think that's a good point, Charmaine. And I'm Wayne Saliday, even if we're talking about more conventional pets like dogs or cats, should people be able to safely assume that if they have to end up at a shelter, that their animal would be welcome there?
Well, here's the problem. Charlotte County, for example, has no human shelters. So to think that there's going to be shelters for animals is sort of foolhardy since there's no place for humans.
Mm.
So one of the things that we have always emphasized is families don't leave members behind. We know that statistically, you go and look at hurricanes and other events, disaster events, 80% of pets never get back to their families. And that's a tragic statistic that's got to be changed. If it's large animals, it takes that much more work that you have to do to make sure that those animals are cared for and the provisions are in place for them immediately post-storm if they have to be left on high ground. And I emphasize high ground because if you have high ground, that's good. You know, we found situations like in Andrew, as the caller mentioned, you know, they put some beautiful Arabian horses in a brand new facility that had just been completed, and it collapsed on top of those animals, and most of them died of head and neck injuries. So there are times when the animals are better left turned out if, again, they're on high ground, and you go back and take care of them immediately after the storm if you can't move them. But to put them in a structure that has a risk of collapse, like an older barn or something like that, then you're asking for trouble.
All right. Well, Charmaine, thanks so much for emphasizing that point for us.
Great call.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. And also, may I say one more thing? Sarasota County had no animal-friendly shelters, but they put together a great Animal Welfare Advisory Council that worked with the public, the Board of County Commissioners, and the Sheriff's Department, which has animal services up here. And I strongly suggest Charlotte do the same, because sometimes people won't leave without their animals, and then we lose everybody.
All right. Thanks so much, Charmaine. Appreciate it again. And
Here's the problem Charmaine doesn't understand. The difference between Sarasota and Charlotte County from a topography perspective is like night and day. You can rest assured with the animal control that we have, which is under our public safety division, and with the other folks that we have in the animal world, that everything that we could possibly do will be done. You know, but to say we're not doing it just because Sarasota is, you need to understand we have significant shortcomings in terms of available facilities. Sarasota County does not have the storm surge problem. In fact, they don't have even a smidgen of the storm surge problem that we do in Charlotte County.
Talk to us about that, particularly when it comes to, you know, public perception and land elevation, because I think a lot of people believe that, you know, if they're inland far enough that, you know, they can't see the ocean or something, that they're not really at risk.
Well, just because you can't see water doesn't mean it can't find you. You know, here in Charlotte County, we have, of course, Charlotte Harbor off the Gulf of Mexico. And off of Charlotte Harbor run the Myakka River up to the north and northeast, and the Peace River, which runs east-northeast. Then you have Alligator Creek, you have Shell Creek out in the West County, you have Inger Creek, Oyster Creek, you have Coral Creek, Buck Creek, and I could go on. There are others. These are all water conduits that allow that water pushed in from the Gulf of Mexico to make its way up into the neighborhoods. It all comes down to elevation. You know, I don't care if you're not on a canal or if you can't see water or if it takes you 45 minutes to get to the beach. That's not the point. The point is that water can get to you. And that's the part that we emphasize and that we try to educate our public to that reality. No place in America has a bigger storm surge problem percentage-wise other than New Orleans than Charlotte County, Florida. New Orleans Parish, Louisiana is the only place with a higher percent of its population at risk to storm surge.
All right. And just in terms of, you know, preparing for an imminent storm, should that happen, tell us about some of the common items that folks maybe forget about or forget to prepare for.
Well, one was already mentioned, things for the pets, mm-hmm. making sure you have their papers, making sure you have things to keep them comfortable, keep them occupied, depending on where you end up. Make sure you have water, not only for the family, but also for that pet as well. That's critically important that be part of your kit. You also have to have things for elders. You have to have adequate supplies of medicines. The number one thing in your kit is water. When the power goes out, and it was out for 13 days here after Charlie, and the temperatures go up into the 90s, people don't last long without water. So if you don't have 1 gallon per person per day until we can start trucking water into the area, you're going to be in trouble very quickly.
All right. And we have discussed a few different ways that folks can stay informed. But Jeff Huffman, tell us a bit about the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network app that I know launched last summer.
Yeah, yes, and a second phase is coming soon. It's a way for our listeners to continue listening to our live coverage during the event of a tropical storm or hurricane, and in an evacuation as well. You can hand off from one station to the next as you're traveling if you happen to move into a different market. All the while, it's got the standard weather app features, the radar, it's got lightning alerts. So you can customize alerts for up to 8 locations, and one thing that we really work closely with emergency management on is geo-targeted alerts, where when they send out a notification of something, we can closely tie that into a notification through the app from one of their pieces of information as well. So especially if it's geo-RSS feed to us. So basically, you're getting as many alert options as you can that you can turn on and off. You're getting the weather information, and you're able to listen to WGCU in the event of a storm.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for this portion of the program. But thanks so much to my guests, Florida Public Radio Emergency Network meteorologist Jeff Huffman and director of Charlotte County's Office of Emergency Management, Wayne Saliday. Great to have both of you back on the program.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Thank you, Tom.
Earlier in the segment, we'd also heard from FEMA Administrator Craig Fugate speaking with WGCU's Topher Forges. We're taking a short break, but when we return, the risk of storm surge in the event of a hurricane naturally leads our attention to the issue of flood insurance. We'll take a look at the current status of the National Flood Insurance Program, concerns over affordable flood insurance policies, and efforts to expand the flood insurance market. That conversation's just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to WGCU NPR for Southwest Florida.